Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
In September, a relatively small group of demonstrators with handwritten cardboard signs gathered in a small park in the heart of New York's financial district. They were barely noticed by cable news channels and pointedly ignored by most of the bankers and traders who were on their way to work. But they were persistent. They didn't break windows or attack police officers. They simply refused to go home. A month later, it's not a small group anymore. It's thousands. And it's not just New York. It's dozens of cities around the country. And they're getting people to pay attention. Just this morning, the city of New York postponed their plans to clean Zuccotti Park. That's the main square for the movement. Protesters had warned they would resist if authorities tried to force them out. Joining us now, Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
You know, I said this before, and I still think it's true. You know, you watched the protests going forward and becoming a revolution in Egypt. And so you're perhaps the best to perhaps draw comparisons or not between what's happening in Wall Street and other protests to what happened in Tahrir Square.
Well, you know, I really think there is a certain comparison, and I don't want to overdraw it. I mean, if you just look at the response, then the Egyptian authorities were opening fire on protesters, and obviously that's not happening here. But when you talk to the protesters, whether it's here or whether it's in Tahrir, there's this same sense of marginalization. There's this sense of frustration with a political economic system that to them just seems to have failed them and failed the country. And I think that's exactly what it has gotten so much traction around this country.
All right. Well, if you accept to at least some extent the comparison with Tahrir Square, what about the comparison with the Tea Party? That's a comparison that keeps getting drawn and yet seems to irritate members of the Tea Party.
Yeah, but I think there is, again, something there. I think that there is a deep frustration with perception that people have just kind of gotten away with murder by manipulating the system. And on the right, that tended to lead to the Tea Party and to laissez-faire solutions. And on the left, that has led to Occupy Wall Street and to, you know, more interventionist solutions. But I think that there is some real similarity in terms of a populist uprising, if you will.
Nicholas Kristof, you mentioned that the police obviously aren't shooting into crowds at the Occupy Wall Street protests. Nevertheless, not so much in Syria, where there doesn't appear to be any constraint on government authorities at all. But even in Egypt, you did see a sense of, you know, the people are us eventually, and the violence really sort of caused the entire protest to become this national movement. The only comparison you can draw here, if you look at this confrontation averted this morning at Zuccotti Park, is that it seems as though city authorities here definitely do feel constrained by how much they can really rein in these protesters, given the sense of layoffs that are going on here in the city of New York and in other cities around the country.
Yeah, and obviously, one can't take a comparison in the handling of it, you know, too far. But I do think that it is fair to say that in each case, mishandling by the authorities ended up empowering the protesters. The way the police in New York, one senior police officer pepper sprayed some women protesters, just hugely galvanized the protest, gave it more publicity, recruited more people. And Mayor Bloomberg, I think, is, you know, normally I think a very shrewd politician, but I think in the last couple of days in preparing for this cleanup, which sure seemed to pretext for moving people away, I think that likewise has, even though he called it off, I think it has hugely empowered the protests.
Well, let me then get your reaction to what's happened this morning, which is that the city of New York said that they postponed plans. In fact, it was the owner of the park. The park is privately owned, and the NYPD, a spokesman, said that the owner has said they'll postpone the plans, and they withdrew their request for police support for that. But at the same time, the simple threat of clearing out the park brought out thousands upon thousands of protesters there to march in solidarity. And they're now marching, as I understand, down Broadway, down Beaver, and there have now been arrests. Photos of protesters in handcuffs are all over the internet at this point.
Yeah, the threat to clean up the park and move people out and ban sleeping bags, I just think that was a huge misstep for the administration. And while it did nominally come from the park owners, it also seemed to be very, very closely coordinated with the mayor and sure seemed to have his fingerprints on it. I'm delighted that he backed off, but he backed off only 40 minutes before, you know, he was on the verge of a fiasco.
So let's take it to its next step. This a victory for the protesters? This sort of a galvanizing moment?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, the protesters face a real constraint in terms of the clock, that we're heading towards winter, and it's going to be a lot less easy to recruit people to huddle in the snows to protest Wall Street greed. But every time something like this happens, that gives it a new boost, and so I think it's a tug between between the crackdowns that enliven it and the coming cold weather.
All right, so Nicholas Kristof, let me just ask you: let's go back to that comparison with the Tea Party. Is it inevitable that Occupy Wall Street will either die out in the face of cold weather or begin to get enshrined in certain political candidates, Tea Party candidates, that will end up running and presenting a political platform for the Wall Street protesters? Is that coming?
Well, the Democratic Party is clearly trying to co-opt to some degree the Occupy Wall Street movement. I don't think it's going to get very far. There's a deep suspicion on the part of the Occupy Wall Street folks of the way the White House in particular has been close to banks. So I guess I would be a little bit skeptical that this movement is going to become as political in the sense of backing candidates the way the Tea Party did. But even if it, you know, if it dies down to some degree in the winter, I think that the issues here of accountability and of economic inequality really have gained traction and, you know, may well be here to stay.
At the very least, it's a narrative of the freedom to make money versus the freedom to express yourself in a protest.
Yeah. And this is, I think, you know, caught the imagination in and touched issues that are important to the nation, like inequality, that really haven't gotten much attention. When 400 Americans have more wealth than the bottom 150 million, then I think that's a real potential issue that can indeed be higher on the agenda, and I think they put it there.
Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks as always, Nick.
My pleasure.
We want to get your take on these protests, whether you're seeing them in Wall Street, in Boston, Denver, Seattle, or Los Angeles, wherever you are. Are you part of the 99%? Do you have criticism of the Occupy Wall Street protests? Or do you have video or pictures of a protest going on near you? Whatever you've got, let us know. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post your comments at thetakeaway.org.